Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Mom and Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today is going to be a weekly docket episode where we talk about the true crime headlines for this week. And this week's headlines are pretty wild. We've got the deadly floods in Texas, not only the devastation that came with that, but also the heated political drama and misinformation that has been surrounding that. So I'm going to do my best to kind of just tell you guys what's going on and then maybe kind of debunk some of the misinformation that's been going on regarding the floods. There's also a guilty verdict that was 10 years in the making in the Crystal Rogers case. You might remember we talked about Crystal Rogers and her disappearance in episode 126. And then we've also got a romantic anniversary getaway that turned into a baffling disappearance, plus a teenager in Georgia accused of brutally murdering her parents and then pretending to help solve the case, and a Connecticut teen house party stabbing trial ends with a shocking verdict this week. So buckle up, because this week's docket is packed with all the twists and turns and all the jaw-dropping details. So let's dive in. First, we have to talk about the floods that are going on in Texas. Now, if you follow me on Instagram, mama.mysterypodcast, I do tend to share a lot on my stories, and I try my best to share positive things to my stories, since a lot of what I post on my static feed is pretty tragic and kind of disheartening. But the Texas floods just really kind of consumed me. I don't know if it's because we are about to send our kids to a summer camp that is very similar to Camp Mystic, where a lot of this takes place, where a lot of this tragedy takes place. But I think a lot of moms just relate to this situation because we send our kids to summer camp and there's a lot of anxiety that comes with that. You send your kids and most often you don't get to talk to your kids when they're at camp. Unless it's an emergency, they don't let you have a lot of phone calls. You can write letters or send them messages, but my kids go to Camp Kanakuk, which is in Branson, and it's a church camp. But, you know, summer is the time for all of the camps, the summer camps, the Boy Scout and Girl Scout camps. And so I know that there are a lot of parents who have witnessed what happened down in Texas and really were able to sympathize or empathize with the mothers, the parents who had missing kids that were in Camp Mystic. And so there was a full day where I just could not stop crying. And I don't typically let these stories really affect me that deeply. I try so hard to compartmentalize and not let it affect me, but this one just really had me down for like a while. Let me just kind of tell you what happened. Heavy rainfall in central Texas triggered these catastrophic flash floods in the early hours of July 4th, catching many residents of Kerrville in Texas off guard as they were sleeping. Now, the Guadalupe River is the river that runs through Kerrville, and it surged over 20 feet in some areas in less than an hour, inundating communities like Kerr County and surrounding hill country towns. By midweek, the death toll had risen to at least 111 people, including many children, with roughly 170 people still missing or unaccounted for today. Among the worst hit locales was Camp Mystic, which is a girls-only summer camp along the river in Hunt, Texas, where 27 campers and counselors tragically lost their lives when the floodwaters swept through the cabins. The historic flash flood now ranks as the deadliest U.S. freshwater flooding event since 1976. Now, officials say that the National Weather Service, NWS, had issued flood watches more than 12 hours before the floods, and multiple flash flood warnings and emergency alerts were sent out during the night. However, unfortunately, the worst flooding struck at around 4 o'clock in the morning when most people, including these campers at Camp Mystic, were asleep and unlikely to see these alerts. In some hard-hit rural areas, cell service was really poor, so not everyone received the emergency text warnings that were sent out at 1:14 a.m., labeling the situation life-threatening. Survivors described waking up to rushing water. Some campers were swept from their bunks, and families had literally just minutes to seek higher ground. First responders and volunteers mounted extensive search and rescue operations, saving hundreds of people from rooftops and submerged vehicles, even trees. And Texas Governor Greg Abbott mobilized over 20 state agencies for the effort and noted that it was an all-hands-on-deck effort or mission to find the missing people. Now, in the aftermath, political controversy erupted on social media, and I saw a lot of this on my own Facebook. For the most part, everyone treated this with compassion and just heartbreak for the people that were affected by this, the families, the children. I want you to think for a moment, because this is what kept going through my mind, and I want you to think about what these girls went through, not just the girls, but everyone that was affected by this flood. These girls went to bed in their bunks. They had their trunks that are all decorated, personalized for them at the end of their bunks. They went to sleep excited for what the next day was going to bring, because camp is always so much fun and it's always so jam-packed with activities. Imagine these poor girls, 8, 9 years old, okay? 8 and 9 years old, being woken up by floodwaters and the sounds that probably came with that, the screaming, the screeching of the bunk beds moving around, the destruction, things clanging, and just the pure fear. And these counselors, who are maybe 18 to 21 years old, I mean, they're usually young kids, being woken up and realizing that they have 20 girls in their bunk, 28 and 9-year-olds, to somehow save and get to higher ground. I mean, I don't think that many people really put themselves in that situation, especially the people who are fighting about this politically. I just feel like, can we take a minute, can we take a breath to just appreciate the devastation that has just happened without turning it into this political narrative? But no, of course, there are people on social media who want to turn it into something political. And some liberal commentators blamed the Trump administration and Republican officials, suggesting that federal staffing cuts had hampered disaster preparedness. For example, there is a progressive influencer named Ron Filipowski who tweeted that Texans voted for government services controlled by Donald Trump and Greg Abbott, and that is exactly what they are getting, implying negligence before they eventually deleted the post because they faced a lot of backlash, understandably. There was also a Houston pediatrician, Dr. Christina Probst, who went even further. In a Facebook post, she vented that, quote, Kerr County MAGA voters deny climate change. May they get what they voted for, end quote, wishing that those affected reap the effects of policies to gut FEMA. And her insensitive remarks suggesting that Trump supporters deserved the disaster were widely condemned as inhumane. Her employer actually fired her and stated that politicizing tragedy fails to uphold compassion, and announcing that she was no longer employed by, I think it was Bluefish Pediatrics, no longer employed after that post went viral. But even prominent liberals criticized such rhetoric. Former Bernie Sanders co-chair Nina Turner called it shameful to respond to children dying with, that's what they voted for. And I don't typically get political on here. I think there's probably some people who know where I stand, but I really try to just keep it to true crime because I'm not trying to create division on this podcast. But I had people reach out to me, and I'm so grateful. CJ is one of my loyal listeners, and we follow each other on Facebook, you know, she doesn't care for Trump. And I can respect that. I can respect anyone's political views as long as they're not weaponizing it against other people. But, you know, I've seen a lot of Democrats even say that this type of reaction is just so shameful and embarrassing and insensitive. And so I feel like I have to point that out because I'm seeing so much of it on my own social media. When I share these stories, I'm seeing a lot of insensitive comments. Now, a wave of misinformation about supposed budget cuts circulated during the tragedy. And some posts claim that Trump-era cuts to the National Weather Service or FEMA left Texans vulnerable. And so when I fact-checked this, I found that while the Trump administration did pursue a downsizing initiative from DOGE that encouraged some early retirements at like the National Weather Service offices, meteorologists confirmed that it did not impede this flood warning effort. In fact, the local NWS office had extra staff on duty monitoring the storms, up to 5 forecasters instead of the typical 2. And they issued timely alerts well in advance of the flooding. They did their job and they did it well. And the planned budget cuts to NOAA, which oversees NWS, were not even in effect yet. The reductions were slated for the fiscal year of 2026, starting in October. So they had no impact on the July 2025 flood warnings. So I take that however you will. To me, it doesn't freaking matter when there are children who are lost because of these floods. You know, when I say like it doesn't matter, I'm saying politics don't matter. Whether you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, I don't give a shit. There are kids that are hurt. There are kids that are missing still. There are kids who lost their lives. They drowned in flood, dirty, muddy floodwaters. And their parents who dropped them off at camp, knowing they wouldn't get to speak to them for a week at least, are now having to go pick up their trunks, pick up their kids' belongings, and kiss their lifeless babies' faces goodbye. So put your politics aside for a minute and just be a fucking human being. That's all I have to say about that. Let's move on to the next one. This next case is one that we've talked about before. This is Crystal Rogers. We talked about her entire story in episode 126, but after a decade of mystery in one of Kentucky's most infamous cold cases, there is finally a measure of justice for the family of Crystal Rogers. Now, Crystal, if you remember, is a 35-year-old mother of 5 from Bardstown, Kentucky, who vanished in July of 2015. Her car was found abandoned with a flat tire on the side of the road, but there was no trace of her body. Well, this week, a jury found her former boyfriend, Brooks Houck, guilty of her murder and related charges, concluding a long-awaited trial that Bardstown residents had hoped for since Crystal disappeared. Now, Brooks Houck, who is now 43, was Rogers, Crystal's live-in boyfriend at the time that she went missing and had long been the prime suspect, though he, of course, maintained his innocence for years. In a Bowling Green courtroom on July 8th, the jury convicted Brooks of murder and tampering with physical evidence in Crystal's death. They recommended the maximum sentence of life in prison for the murder plus 5 additional years for the evidence tampering to be served consecutively. Brooks showed little to no emotion as the verdict was read, while Crystal's relatives in attendance openly wept and then hugged each other after finally hearing guilty after so many years. But Brooks was not the only person implicated. 2 other men, a father and son from the community, were also charged in connection with the crime, accused of helping Brooks cover up the killing. Joseph Lawson, who's 33, and his father, Stephen Lawson, who's 55, were alleged co-conspirators. In this same trial, the Lawsons were found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder and tampering with evidence related to Crystal's death. Jurors recommended a 20-year prison term for Joseph Lawson on the conspiracy charge, plus 5 years for tampering, so 25 years total, and then similar penalties for his father, Stephen. Final formal sentencing for all 3 is scheduled for August 21st, where a judge will confirm the sentences. Prosecutors revealed that cell phone records and witness testimony about inconsistencies in Brooks' alibi were really key in persuading the jury, despite the case being largely circumstantial, because Crystal's body has never been found, making the conviction extraordinary. Investigators indicated that mountains of physical and digital evidence and years of police work compensated for the lack of a recovered body. Now, for context, Crystal Rogers' disappearance rocked the small town of Bardstown in 2015. She was last seen alive on July 3rd of that year, and she was reported missing by her family after her maroon Chevy was discovered on the side of the highway. Suspicion quickly centered on Brooks Houck because he was the last person to see her and was accused of not participating in searches and just kind of being really flippant about her disappearance. However, the case languished until recent years when a new investigative task force re-examined evidence. And Brooks was finally arrested and charged in 2023, nearly 8 years after Rogers went missing. During the 10-day trial in 2025, prosecutors outlined a theory that Brooks, possibly with the help from the Lawsons, killed Crystal and then disposed of her body to avoid a custody or relationship dispute. The exact motive was not definitively established in court, but we can assume because they did have a child together, it did seem like their relationship was kind of falling apart. But the defense argued that there was no direct proof of murder, pointing to the lack of a body and claiming reasonable doubt. But in just 4 hours of deliberation, jurors sided with the prosecution's narrative. Sherry Ballard, who is Crystal's mother, tearfully told reporters that she never gave up hope that this day would come. And if you'll remember, Crystal's dad, Tommy Ballard, was tragically shot and killed on November 19th of 2016, so not even a year after Crystal went missing, but he was out hunting with his 12-year-old grandson, Crystal's son, on family-owned land in Nelson County, Kentucky. And Tommy had become a relentless advocate for justice following Crystal's disappearance. He was acting like a detective. He was going, getting the hard answers to hard questions. I mean, he was so involved in the search for Crystal. And so when he was hunting with his grandson, he ended up getting shot in the chest. And authorities believe that the bullet was fired from a distance by an unknown assailant who has never been identified. To this day, Tommy Ballard's murder remains unsolved, and many suspect that his death was directly connected to his relentless pursuit of justice for Crystal. So my heart really goes out to Sherry, because Sherry, I feel like, was trying to finish Tommy's job. And now that there is justice and a guilty verdict has been issued, I'm sure that Tommy is so proud of Sherry. And I just hope to God that Sherry can find some peace and closure after this. Now, this next one is kind of one that's been under the radar, but I came across it on social media and I just thought it was really fascinating, and my thoughts are mixed, so I'd like to hear what you guys think happened in this story. But a New York City man's anniversary trip to a tropical paradise has turned into a baffling mystery. Brian Terrence, who's 51 years old, traveled with his wife Maria to the Turks and Caicos Islands in late June to celebrate their first wedding anniversary. Now, for the first few days, the vacation was picture perfect, talking to not be in Turks and Caicos, but the couple enjoyed boat excursions and beautiful dinners, and they were staying at a small inn in the safe resort area of Grace Bay. But in the pre-dawn hours of June 25th, Brian strangely left their hotel room around 3:30 a.m. and never returned. Surveillance footage captured him calmly walking down Grace Bay Road with his phone in hand and wallet on him, wearing a t-shirt, shorts, and sneakers. His wife was asleep and had no idea that he had gone out. So when she awoke that morning to find him missing, a search began that soon involved the entire island community. Local police and volunteers mobilized quickly, scouring beaches, roads, and jungled areas of the island for any sign of Brian. Private investigator Carl DeFazio, who was hired by Brian's family, noted that the entire island was looking for him. His picture is posted every...
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everywhere. And indeed, flyers with Brian's face went up across Turks and Caicos, and authorities used drones and CCTV footage in their efforts. Yet for over a week, there were no clues, no activity on his phone or credit cards, no sightings by anyone after that initial 3:30 a.m. video. And the private investigator expressed surprise at the lack of evidence, remarking that it was very strange for Brian to vanish without a trace in a busy tourist area. Now, at that hour, however, virtually everything in town was closed, and the normally bustling Grace Bay Beach was dark and empty. So friends and family have been left grasping at questions like, why would Brian go out alone at that time? Did he encounter foul play? Did he suffer an accident? Did he just wander off and get lost? Was he sleepwalking? Like, what was he doing at 3:30 in the morning? And as of now, there's really no answers. But then a grim development came 10 days later on July 5th. Search teams discovered a badly decomposed body in a bushy area about 20 minutes from the room where Brian and his wife were staying. The remains were found in a ditch off a quiet part of Leeward Highway, not far from where Brian was last seen. Because of the advanced decomposition, the body had likely been exposed to tropical heat for over a week, so I'm sure you can imagine. But because of that, officials could not immediately confirm the identity. The body's clothing and items, a watch, shorts, sneakers, could match Brian's description, but investigators cautioned against assumptions until forensic identification is complete. The Royal Turks and Caicos Police said only that it was a male body and that an autopsy and DNA tests are underway. They have informed Brian's family of the discovery while stopping short of a confirmation. So as of now, Brian Terrence remains officially missing, and his loved ones are in this agonizing limbo. The fact that a body was found so close to where he vanished suggests that it's probably him, but everyone is really just waiting for that final word. If it is Brian, investigators will then seek to determine how he died, whether by misadventure or something more sinister. There were no obvious signs of trauma that were announced, and police have not ruled anything out, but the case has attracted international attention, with safety concerns raised for tourists in the usually serene Turks and Caicos. So for the islanders who joined the search, the discovery was really heartbreaking because many people held out this hope that they would find Brian alive and maybe just lost somewhere. But for now, until forensic results come in, the mystery continues. A joyful vacation, a first anniversary vacation, turned into a nightmare. And as soon as I hear word on the identification of that body, I will update you, whether it's in a weekly docket or an episode by itself. But I'll keep an eye on this case to see what happens. And hopefully, if we can figure out how he ended up getting there, if it is him. With the limited information that we have, my initial thoughts are that maybe if he wandered out at 3:30, maybe he wasn't feeling well and was on the cusp of having a heart attack. And as he was walking, maybe he had a heart attack and that's what happened. Like, I would like to think that it's something natural and not something nefarious, but I guess we will just have to wait and see if we can get those answers. Okay, now this next case is crazy because this case happened in Georgia and it's revolving around a 17-year-old girl who was charged with the cold-blooded murder of her mother and stepfather, a crime that she allegedly tried to cover up by pretending to be this grieving, innocent teen. So Sarah Grace Patrick of Carroll County, Georgia, was arrested on July 8th and charged as an adult with 2 counts of murder and 2 counts of aggravated assault. The charges stem from a horrific incident on February 20th of 2025, when her mother, Kristen Brock, who was 41, and stepfather, James Brock, who was 45, were found shot to death in their own bedroom. Disturbingly, it was actually Sarah's 6-year-old little sister who discovered the bloodied bodies that morning and ran to alert Sarah of the unresponsive parents. So then Sarah called 911, sounding hysterical and claiming that someone had killed her mom and stepdad while they were asleep. From that moment on, and for months afterward, Sarah publicly portrayed herself as a heartbroken daughter, desperate to find whoever committed the crime. Investigators now say that that was all a charade. They believe Sarah Patrick was the killer all along, staging an elaborate ruse to hide her guilt. For nearly 5 months, the double murder case really just confused police. Detectives had no signs of forced entry at the Brock home on Tyus Road, and initially there was no obvious suspect. Sarah, who was 16 at the time of the killings, gave really emotional statements to the media and on social media, insisting that an unknown intruder must have broken in. In the weeks following the murders, she posted these grieving TikTok videos mourning her mom and stepdad. At the joint funeral, she delivered an impassioned eulogy about cherishing family, telling mourners that there's nothing we can do to bring them back, and urging kindness in her parents' memory. On Mother's Day, Sarah posted childhood photos with her mom, captioned, "My ultimate inspiration comes from my best friend." But behind closed doors, investigators were growing suspicious. According to the Carroll County Sheriff's Office, they said, quote, "From the very moment the 911 call was received, a relentless investigation began, and over months, it yielded mountains of physical and digital evidence," end quote, that pointed to Sarah. By early July, detectives had gathered enough proof to obtain warrants for her arrest, and then confronted with the evidence, Sarah voluntarily turned herself in, arriving at the sheriff's office on July 8th, accompanied by her biological father, who is not implicated in the crime. But perhaps the most astonishing revelation is how actively Sarah tried to mislead the public while knowing that she was the culprit. Investigators say Sarah not only used TikTok, but even reached out to true crime content creators and websites trying to generate online attention to help find the supposed murderer. And one true crime blogger, I believe her page is Allegedly Reportedly, but one true crime blogger shared messages that Sarah sent just weeks after the killings that say, quote, "They're my parents, and out of nowhere, a random Thursday night in February, someone came into my house and shot my parents brutally, leaving them for me and my little sister to wake up to," end quote. And she wrote this as if she was this innocent victim begging for coverage of this unsolved case. And she emphasized that it was still an open case and said that she wanted to shine light on it, hoping that the true crime community might help to uncover clues. All the while, Sarah knew exactly what happened and was brazenly just deflecting suspicion onto this fictitious intruder. So on her TikTok account, which has now been removed, she had posted a chilling video montage with old clips of her mom and stepdad set to music, with a caption implying that one year from those happy moments, she and her sister would find them wrongfully shot dead and they would miss her graduation and wedding. And many now view those posts as really eerie and creepy and perhaps offering a glimpse into her psyche. It's almost like someone who fakes cancer to get attention, but like this is taking it to a whole new extreme. And I mean like extreme, killing your parents to garner sympathy from the public. I can't think of anything more heinous. But at a press conference, Carroll County Sheriff's spokesperson, Ashley Holsey, called the case very horrific and sad and admitted that they don't know what goes through the mind of a child that wants to harm their parents. So the motive really remains a mystery. Authorities have not publicly disclosed why Sarah might have murdered the Brocks. They're also investigating whether anyone else was involved. And Holsey noted that the case is ongoing. Additional arrests are possible, though she said that other family members have been cooperative so far. The evidence amassed was compelling enough that Sarah has been charged as an adult, meaning that she could face a lengthy prison term or even life if she's convicted. For the community, one heartbreaking aspect is the fate of this six-year-old sister, and she really is the saddest victim. Not only did she experience the trauma of finding her parents' dead bodies, but she has effectively lost her older sister as well. So the child is now in the care of relatives, and as the legal process unfolds, many are recoiling at the deceit involved in this case. And true crime observers, myself included, really compare Sarah's actions to something out of a thriller novel, like this perpetrator pretending to be a victim, even engaging with social media sleuths. And in reality, this tragic situation leaves two people dead, a family shattered, and a community just asking why. So I don't know. We've covered some cases like this where young teens will do this because they want to avoid punishment for bad grades, or they want to be with a boyfriend that their parents don't approve of, or whatever the case may be. But man, this is just shocking. All right, now this last story is one that has been circulating a lot on social media. I've had people ask me to cover it as well. And so I'll just kind of recap it for you here. If you'd like a deep dive on it, though, please let me know in the Spotify comments, or you can message me at mamamystery.com by scrolling down to that white box, and you can send me a message there. But a high-profile trial in Connecticut has just concluded this week with a surprising verdict. Raul Val, who's 20 years old, was on trial for murder and assault in connection with a deadly melee at a teen house party back in May of 2022. After nearly 2 weeks of testimony, a jury this Wednesday found Raul not guilty of murder and other top charges in the stabbing death of 17-year-old James, or Jimmy, McGrath. Jimmy was a beloved Fairfield Prep student, and he was killed on May 14th of 2022 when a fight erupted outside of a house in Shelton, Connecticut. Three other teens were stabbed and injured in the same incident. Now, Raul, who was 16 years old at the time and a student at St. Joseph's High School in Trumbull, was accused of being the assailant who wielded the knife that night. Prosecutors charged him with McGrath's murder and multiple counts of assault for the wounds inflicted on the other boys, painting him as the instigator of a violent attack. The defense, however, argued that Raul acted in self-defense amid a chaotic fight between feuding groups of teenagers. So the trial's outcome was kind of a mixed bag, because Raul was acquitted of the most serious counts, murder, intentional manslaughter, and first-degree assaults. But the jury hung on several lesser charges like reckless manslaughter and assault, leading the judge to declare a partial mistrial on those counts, which I've actually never seen that happen before. Not saying that it's never happened before, I've just never seen it. But the case became known as the prep school party stabbing in local media. It stemmed from a confrontation between two groups of boys from different high schools. Earlier on May 14th of 2022, a fight had broken out at a party on Lazy Brook Road between teens from Shelton High School and some from St. Joseph's, which was Raul's high school. The groups trash-talked each other on social media afterward, and tensions ran high, as they typically do when you're talking about teenage boys. But later that night, Raul and several of his friends from school drove to another gathering on Laurel Glen Drive in Shelton, where some Shelton kids, including Jimmy McGrath, were hanging out. Witnesses testified that when Raul's car arrived, a crowd of Shelton teens mobbed the vehicle, punching and kicking it. Someone damaged the car. So angry and scared, Raul allegedly asked a friend, Jack Snyder, for a knife. Now, Jack Snyder, who later cooperated with prosecutors under immunity, handed it over. Raul and two friends then got out, and a physical fight erupted on the lawn. In the span of seconds, Raul slashed out with the blade, stabbing three 16-year-old boys, hitting one in the chest, another in the side, and another in the back as they were fighting. Those three wounded teens survived their injuries, and as that initial fight broke up, witnesses said that Raul briefly retreated toward the car, but then ran back and stabbed Jimmy McGrath, who had come outside during the commotion, delivering a fatal wound to Jimmy's heart. Raul and the other St. Joe's boys then fled the scene, and Jimmy McGrath's friends desperately tried CPR, but the popular lacrosse player succumbed to his injury. So at the trial, the core question was whether Raul was an aggressor or acting in self-defense. The defense argued that Raul was outnumbered and feared for his life that night. In his own testimony, Raul admitted that he caused the wounds, but insisted that knife was the only thing that was going to save him when he was surrounded and being attacked. His attorney described the knife as a tool of survival, not murder, claiming that he was ambushed by a hostile crowd and did what he had to do to break free. Prosecutors presented a very different narrative. They contended that Raul and his friends went looking for a fight. Senior Assistant State Attorney Mark Durso argued that Raul was enraged about his friend's car getting damaged, armed himself with a knife, and initiated a violent confrontation rather than avoiding it. Even if one might forgive using the knife to fend off the first attackers, the state argued that Raul chasing back to stab an unarmed Jimmy McGrath was intentional and not self-defense at all. The jury deliberated over 2 days, and in the end, they apparently had reasonable doubt about the murder and intentional assault charges, perhaps believing that the chaotic circumstances gave credence to Raul's fear for his safety. So they acquitted him on those counts. However, they could not unanimously decide on the lesser alternatives like reckless manslaughter, suggesting that some jurors felt his actions were criminally reckless, while others did not. Now, those unresolved counts resulted in a mistrial for those charges, leaving the prosecution to decide if they will retry him on the lesser offenses. The verdict left Jimmy's family stunned. Jimmy's father expressed shock and disappointment that nobody was held fully accountable for his son's death. Outside the courthouse, Fairfield Prep classmates in their school jackets consoled one another and Jimmy's parents. Raul, who had been out on bond, hugged his defense attorney in relief, and he still faces the possibility of a retrial on the outstanding lesser charges, but for now, he avoids a murder conviction that could have put him behind bars for decades. I'd love to hear your opinions on this, especially on the heels of that last story where a 16, now 17-year-old girl is accused of killing her parents. I know that there is a lot of like frontal lobe development that needs to happen in those teenage years. And so I don't ever expect teenagers to always make the best decisions. However, a decision was made to get out of the car. A decision was made by the driver of the car to not drive off. They participated in this fight by getting out of the vehicle. And to know that he got out of the car and went towards Jimmy even after the fight was kind of after the dust kind of settled, to me, that's also a choice. So I don't know, maybe I just need to know more details about this. I'm sure there's a lot that I'm not talking about here because it's only like, 5 minutes of a story. But I'd like to hear what you guys think, if you guys have been following this case or if you'd like for me to do a deep dive on it, because for some reason, the jury acquitted him. So what is the reason? I'd like to know too. So if you'd like a deep dive, just let me know. That is it for this week's weekly docket. I hope you all have a great weekend and a great week ahead. Thank you so much for listening to Mama Mystery. If you like these episodes, it would mean so much to me if you shared these episodes, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss a future episode as well. That's it. Stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery out. Bye.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.